Hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled Taylor, and I realize I forgot to ask the correct pronunciation of your name before hitting record, so I'm gonna try. Grieshaber?
Greasehober.
Greasehober!
Yeah.
This episode is entitled Taylor Greasehober's Off Days. And it is about a wonderful collection of five short stories entitled Off Days from Logos Press. And our guest for this episode is someone who knows something about Taylor Greasehober's.
Hober.
Taylor Greasehober's. Screwed up twice.
You're fine.
Taylor Greasehober's Off Days. Taylor Greasehober. Hi, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me, Matt. This is great.
Yeah, so say something about yourself or introduce yourself to the fine listening audience of 10 people or whoever.
The few people that listen. Yeah. My name's Taylor, and I've been living in Pittsburgh pretty much for the last 10 years. I took a little hiatus to go to grad school in Oregon. And I just moved back to Pittsburgh in August, and now I'm going to be a homeowner. So I guess that's what I want to say.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's pretty permanent.
Mm-hmm. Very permanent. Roots.
Roots.
Putting down those roots.
Foundations.
Yeah, I got a lawnmower in my car right now that I just bought.
Whoa. Oh, that's right. That's the thing about homeowners. All that stuff you have to buy.
I had to buy all that stuff because I've been a renter my whole life. Yeah.
Got a pipe wrench?
No, I didn't get a pipe wrench. I got a great multi-tool that has like a, you know, it has like a beer opener, pliers.
That sounds great.
You know, a
box. You need a pipe
cutter.
Wrench.
Okay.
I'll tell you what. Well, I say that because the second week we had our house, we got a kitten. Like, our old house.
Uh-huh.
Got a kitten. I was like, yeah, let's get a kitten. We got a house now. We have a dog. Let's get a kitten. You know, the dog needs a pet. And we got the kitten, and I brought her home in a box from work. It was literally a printer paper box. I didn't have a cat carrier. I was so not prepared for kittenhood.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got the house, and yeah, I didn't own a lawnmower yet. But I had a lawn, and we got the kitten, and the kitten was seemingly comfortable in the box, and we're like, let's take the kitten out of the box. And they took the kitten out of the box, and the kitten immediately kind of walked around, noticed that she could wedge herself underneath the radiator in the living room, and did so.
Wow. So then you had to take it out.
That was the thought, and I didn't even own a pipe wrench.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, the best was I called the vet, and they were like, well, is the heat on? Like, that was the great first question, and I was like, that is a great question.
I should check.
Yes, I should check on that. And I was like, can I, like, what if I just, like, sprayed her with Pam or, like, butter or something? And then I was in the basement thinking about the pipe wrench I was going to need to run and buy before the Home Depot monolith or home improvement store monolith was about to close, and then she started distress calling, and then I just realized you can rip carpet out.
Oh, I was gonna say, you just left her in there.
I pulled the carpet out underneath her, and then she could get out, and then she just didn't want to, so we just sat there in the cold as a
sense.
But yeah, you need a pipe wrench.
Yeah, okay, that's good to know. Yeah, there's no radiators in my house, which is great. It's forced heat, so the cats, I have cats, they're not able to get under anything. Well, really anything. I can't think of a thing that's in the house that they could get under.
Yeah.
So that's
they'll figure it out.
They'll figure out a way.
And they'll get conjunctivitis.
Cool.
In the fall when the heat's on. There'll be this warm air blowing out, and they'll just be like, wow, I can like press my face against this. And
yeah, I can't wait. Eyeballs.
It's going to be the best.
It's just another bill.
Yeah, it's going to be. Yes, this is what
it
is.
Just more money.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. This is what home ownership is.
Yeah.
And then you die.
Yeah. But I'm really excited about it.
It is totally exciting. Yeah. And I'm assuming it's like a 20s, 30s Pittsburgh house.
It's a 1920. Beautiful hardwood floors.
Oh.
You know, nice. Not as good as your doors in the entryway, but a nice double door in the entryway. Arched entryways.
Pre-World War II American houses. You got it.
Beautiful.
It doesn't care about you, though. You're just a meat thing that's in there, and it will resist you at every turn.
Yeah.
That's the other thing about the houses of this vintage. They don't give a shit.
They don't give a shit about
By the way, you can swear on this.
Oh, great.
Yes.
I do anyway. So
that's great.
I'm glad you don't have to bleep it.
Yes. You know, I always just default to the explicit tag on iTunes because changing it's a real pain. So we can earn it.
We can earn it.
We can earn that.
And we probably will.
Yes. Yeah. So let's talk about this collection of five stories, these five like sort of vignettes that I find really compelling. And so one of the first things I want to talk about in terms of the compellingness of them, and this was my first impression of reading them, is I'm sort of fascinated with the idea that we're living in kind of an interregnum. Like, the something has happened, and we're waiting for the next thing to happen. Uh-huh. It seems like what it means to be alive at this moment in history, 2019. I have to say that because the internet is forever.
Sure.
That we're in this interregnum. Like, you know, the future isn't quite here yet.
Mm-hmm.
And the 21st century doesn't yet feel... I mean, smartphones are nice and glitchy, and they don't actually work really well to make phone calls, but they're here.
Right.
And it seems like, for me, what's interesting is all the compellingness of all five of these stories is that the characters are in some kind of interregnum. There is a past... moment of history, trauma, event has occurred. And you can see their timelines. There is something coming. And maybe they don't even know what that is yet. And I find that so compelling and so part of my broken way that, as an English professor, that I always experience anything contemporary as, well, 20 years from now, if I'm still alive and in higher ed, and I was teaching a special topics course, text to the late 19-teens, late 20-teens, yes, would just be an art. And it is. And so I want to talk about that and how you create sort of compelling fiction, maybe not necessarily with the Big Bang, or there's, you know what I mean? Like, how does that work for you, or...
Yeah, that's an interesting point that I definitely wasn't thinking about when I was writing, but you're right that all these characters are definitely in a transitional mode. None of them are settled. They're either kind of emotionally unsettled or they're actually physically unsettled. Especially the two stories that really focus on the service industry, you have characters that are worn out, that are kind of going through the day-to-day, but are dealing with, like, mental illness or dealing with depression. So I think all of the characters are really in flux. Like, there's no... I mean, none of the characters... I mean, even thinking about what we consider to be what a settled adult looks like. Like, none of these characters are homeowners or married or have children or are kind of heading into that phase in their lives. They're all single women who are kind of grasping for a future that they can't even see or even really get a grasp on. So I think that the transition, I think that that's a big part of each story, being stuck between things.
Yeah, which I like that thought a lot, and thinking about, well, we just talked about home ownership as you know, and thinking about, and it's also maybe 2019 service industry, gig economy, complete profound lack of economic stability. You know, I think of yesterday was the anniversary of my father's passing years ago, but it's cool. But he was a lifer at IBM. He worked for that company for 35 years. And when it was done, they gave him a nice clock. And he owned a lot of stock in that company. And thinking about the psychic damage, this is my academic Marxism popping out here. Alert. The psychic damage that kind of economy does. To people.
Yep. It's interesting you say that because I just spent Father's Day with three of my closest friends who we have all lost our fathers. And we were like, let's do something where we don't think about our dads. But we ended up talking around this idea kind of the whole day about how different our lives look than our parents' lives.
Yes.
And how, like, exciting that is in a lot of ways. Like, not, it's not exciting to have, you know, it's not exciting to have, like, massive student debt.
Yeah, that sucks.
It's not, I mean, there's a lot of terrible things going on in the world, and the earth is fucking dying, but...
That's part of the interregnum, I think.
But right? I will say that, you know, it's like what we're basing our lives around as like single-ish millennials and Gen Xers.
Mm-hmm.
It's around our art. It's around our friends. It's around our communities and making our own kind of families. I'm very close with my family, but a lot of my friends, some of my friends, you know, aren't close with their families and have issues with their families. And it's like we're kind of making this new culture for ourselves. And that's really exciting.
I think that is exciting. You're right. I mean, it's weird that we do live in this glittery world where there are, you know, $7 hot dogs without ketchup.
Yep.
You know, which
there
is
are.
A detail from, oh God, I lost the
I think it's from Off Days.
From Off Days. Ah, yeah. Yes. Yeah, from Off Days, you know, $7 hot dogs without ketchup. Mm-hmm. Ah, that's right. Quit Burger Fever. Yeah, the hot dogs were $7 without ketchup. The staff called them hog logs. Yes, and $7 hot, but like, which is very Pittsburgh also. There's a sure. lot of, you know, this is not a hey, it's Pittsburgh book, but like, it's interesting living, being an East Ender.
Oh, yeah.
In these little, like anybody listening from the East End of Pittsburgh who wants this book, you will catch little details, you know.
Maybe you can figure out where the stories are set. That's always like fun to see.
Yes.
if you can figure out like what I'm talking about, because I often fictionalize names, and there are some names though, especially in Off Days, of places that exist or used to exist, such as the New Dumpling House.
Yes.
And Salt of the Earth, you know.
Yes.
Remember that was that very fancy
oh,
restaurant.
Oh yes.
And then, you know, because I'm not worried about being fired from a job I don't have anymore, I don't know, maybe I want to edit this out, but I don't really fucking care. You know, the hot dog place, that was Franctuary, you know?
Yes, I've had other friends who've worked at that place, and...
Boo.
Yeah, no.
But fun to write about. Very fun,
Fun as an example of New Pittsburgh.
Yes.
That is less than...
Yes.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's glittery.
Yep.
But it's also... You know, wretched.
It's wretched, yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though. Yeah, I mean, I think that... And that was, you know, that place opened up, what, six years ago, maybe? Maybe seven at this point. And that was when...
mean the Lawrenceville one?
Yeah, the Lawrenceville one. The downtown one's been there forever, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. But the Lawrenceville one opened up 6 or 7 years ago. And it's just, that came right at the time when a lot of new restaurants were opening up. And, you know, the thing is, like, I mean, I think about gentrification all the time. Like, I think about it every day. I feel like I'm talking about it all the time, especially with my friends. A lot of us live in Wilkinsburg. So we're thinking about when Wilkinsburg is going to blow up and no one's going to be able to afford to live there and everyone's going to be pushed out. And that's probably going to be in about 5 years, right?
Yeah.
So we talk a lot about that. And, I mean, one thing that's the only good thing that's happened in New Pittsburgh that I think is great is just that there's like more stuff to do now.
Yeah.
And there's more food options.
Yes.
Good food, and there's better nightlife. There's 5 dance nights every single weekend. You know, it used to be just all there was 80s night.
Yeah.
At Belvedere's. And now there's like a million options all the time. We just got to get like late night food and an airport that isn't out in the middle of fucking nowhere, and then we'll be like a real city, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Subway system would be nice too.
A subway system would be cool. Yeah. 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 I don't know. I'd probably be scared to, honestly, I'd be scared to go underground in Pittsburgh. I don't know. I don't want to do it. Yeah. Stay above ground. But it would be cool to not drive.
Yeah, that's, yeah. Pittsburgh you need a car.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's terrible.
Terrible driving. I saw someone get in a car accident just yesterday.
Oh, really?
She was fine, but her tire popped. She was driving in Bloomfield. I just left a restaurant. I hear this loud pop. Woman drives, her tire popped, and she drove right into a parked car. Totaled the whole front of her car.
Oh,
she was okay,
man.
But she was, you know, she was stunned.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also a great metaphor for New Pittsburgh.
And a great metaphor for Father's Day. Like, like, of course, like, the day would end. I had this really pleasant, wonderful day with my friends, and then it's like, oh, sure, a car. Yeah, of course, there'd be, like, a terrifying car accident.
Yeah, we went to see The Shining.
Oh, the new... Wait, you mean...
The old Shining.
The old... Where?
Right now. Science Center at the Rango's Giant Cinema. Oh, in that ginormous...
With the screen. IMAX-y thing?
Yes.
Whoa, was that was that really good? Or
it was bigger.
Yeah. Okay.
It's bigger.
I love The Shining, but I don't know if I could handle it all around me.
Right? Yeah, you know, it was bigger. That was the thing. And it takes a minute, I think, for my eyes to adjust. They showed the trailer. I guess they were showing... They're going to show Hard Day's Night coming up. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of shaky cam. And we got in there and... It was, my eyes, but it was bigger. Now, last year, it was my Facebook memory, AMC showed the Dustin Hoffman, Charles Durning, John Malkovich, Death of a Salesman on Father's Day last year.
Oh, I'd watch that.
That's even better.
Yeah, that's great.
That's perfect. That's perfect. Father's Day.
Yep. Yeah, but, that is Father's Day. Yep.
You know, which is, by the way, I have to say, I love in Anima.
Anima, I think.
Anima.
Yeah.
I love the mom character.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that mom. She's like, fun. She's the worst mom. She's like a bad boomer mom.
Yeah, she's a bad boomer mom.
Which is also, I think, part of this whole thing about our generation and younger generations, or my generation, younger generations, reinventing adulthood under all these pressures. Uh-huh. It's not like you have a model to follow. Uh-uh. It's not like you're going, oh, I'm going to do... I mean, first of all, again, the economy is totally different. You know, like, my dad... You know, you think even higher ed is not, you know, is flying
off
the cliff.
Good luck. You're an adjunct for the rest of your life.
Yes, exactly.
Even though you have a PhD.
Yes.
So, yeah.
It's the best. and with crippling debt to get to that position.
Right.
You know, so that not possible, you know, under those pressures. But also, yeah, I mean, just these people who are actually, even though maybe people don't have houses, don't haven't learned to drive yet, haven't done all these things, yeah, they're really, you know, the 2 a.m. phone call from mom about her spirituality, you know,
it's a very interesting, that generation is so interesting to me, especially because they complain about my generation so much. Yeah, we're so different. I mean, even I talk to my friends all the time about like our how we're not afraid to admit that we're sad or we're feeling bad. We go to therapy. We get on an antidepressant.
We actually
get
help.
We go for a jog. We do not shove things down. I mean, some people do. I'm not trying to like generalize. Of course, there's millennials that are and Gen Xers that are, you know, that compartmentalize and don't, you know, don't think about their feelings ever. But I think for the most part, we're much better at being self-aware and like doing something about our problems and being proactive.
Yeah, I, you know, Father's Day, my dad had two emotional settings, stoicism and gorilla panic.
That's my mom, dude.
Oh,
is
no.
Is your dad my mom?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is your mom a little old Italian man?
No, she is
chain
a...
Chain smoker?
She is a chain smoker.
Oh.
Yeah. She's a chain smoking farmer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's pretty cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, she's a good one. But, yeah, I know all about that. My mom's registers are, like, mad and... It's just like anger and joy. And those are the two registers. Joy is great. God, catch her when she's like happy and it's like, you'll never have more fun. And then there's the other register. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. Love her. I do. Yes. I love her.
So, which I guess maybe leads us into thinking more about these characters as these like sort of... What I love about them is the fully involved sort of entities that they are. And even though they're broken, even though they're imperfect, I'm thinking about the character from Night Owl. Who, has mental health issues, is functioning. I mean, that's the thing, right? We have... Which also is, I mean, so America 2019, right? I mean, people have, we are willing to seek help, our generation, and willing to think about help. But also, you're on your own, dude.
Right.
You know what I mean? As far as like a larger societal, healthcare system, that's sort of like, no, dude, you're on your own.
Yeah,
that's
you don't have health insurance. You can't pay $200 a month for health insurance.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you're fucked then. Start doing yoga. Start meditating. Do a free app for meditation, because you're not going to be able to go to therapy.
Drink some juice.
Like, do some drugs. I don't know. You know? It's like...
Which is, again, so many people, you know, if you want to think Pittsburgh and the weirdness that is Pittsburgh at this moment, like, that's the thing, all these characters, the character from Anima, the character from Off Days, especially, or Night Owl and Off Days, are so recognizable, you know.
Good. It's good to hear.
Bad Boomer Mom's the Bad Boomer Mom from Homemaking for me. Is wonderful. You have this, you know, and what's your approach to sort of, this is now the writing teacher in me asking this question.
Sure.
You know, what is your approach to sort of the invention of character?
Mm-hmm.
And then, and this is solid writing advice, people, you know, the placing of these details that let you know perfectly who these characters are, what their emotional state is, what they're going through. Like, what is your sort of process for making that happen? Because I think it's a big strength of all five of these stories characters, you know them, you recognize them, and you don't have to be told who they are.
It's
just shown, you know, which is something I try to impart in my students.
Everything just starts with voice. Every story that I've ever written, everything I've ever written has started with voice. So I'll write down a line, and it has a very particular voice, has a very particular kind of outlook, and then I build character from there, and I'm not really even conscious of building character. It's not even something I've heard a lot of fiction writers, friends of mine, and just, you know, famous fiction writers talk about their approach to character and building character, and just how deeply they think about it. And I don't really think about character that much. I mean, that's not the part that I'm like conscious of when I'm writing. I think I'm more conscious of how am I going to build setting? What details can I impart to build setting? Like, that doesn't come naturally to me. That's something that's a little bit more of a process. But in terms of character, it really just starts from a character. It just starts from a voice. It starts from a character observing or saying a line of dialogue. And I feel like I kind of know who they are right when that happens. I don't have a lot of problems with character inconsistencies, I guess, is what I'm saying. When I'm working on a story, I'm not like, oh, you know what? She wouldn't say that, actually. I'm like, nope, she'd say that. That's exactly what she'd say, you know?
Do you find yourself thinking as these people sometimes, or?
I like to think of these characters. I like to think, the way I think about character is, in part, is, what's the worst, like, how can this character be bad? Like, in a really fun way. Like, how can they be bad and interesting? Like, what's something I wish I could say, but I'll never say it, because that would be shitty.
Yeah.
Right? It'd be shitty, or it would be crude, or it would be wrong. Like, everyone has wrong-headed thoughts.
Yeah.
And we don't speak them.
Yes.
Because we're self-aware, and we're aware of people's feelings. What if we had characters that weren't? I love writing, like, kind of misbehaving characters. So it's always just kind of like, what could I make? It's fun. It's kind of like, what could I make this character do? Like, what could I make this character say here that would be so telling and maybe mean or wrongheaded or judgmental or sad or endearing? You know, sometimes I'm like, yeah, this is endearing for a character to think this or say this, but
the funeral in one, This Is How I Leave You, mm-hmm. is a great example of this. I'm not going to tell people what happens there, but they need to buy the book.
Yeah, they need to buy the book.
They need to write the book and read story number 4. Well, read them in order.
Right.
Was sequencing important when putting this book together?
Yeah, I mean, Chris Collins, my editor and my publisher, once we finally got the book together, he was like, okay, so what do you think about order? And I'm like, God, I don't know. I was like, I think we should end on off days, definitely. Or we should start with off. We have to either start with it or end with it. He was like, definitely. So I think what we talked about was like, we were like, okay, Anima is a real banger. Like, it's a banger of a story, right? Like, mm-hmm. you open it and you're like, okay, I definitely want to read the book. Because this is very funny, like, right off the bat. So we were like, let's put that up front.
Which, by the way, I love the fact that the place called Inner Peace has a bug zapper. You talk about worrying about detail and setting.
Sure.
In Anima, the bug zapper.
The bug zapper.
Is perfect.
Yeah.
Is
I often, I mean, approaching setting, it's like, what would be incongruous to the atmosphere
of this
place?
Like, and it's so funny, which, again, is so... Because these... You know, and there's other parts in there about food service and ethical free trade.
Sure.
Vegan, whatever. Those are the worst people.
Uh-huh.
Those are some of the absolute worst people who have this sort of ethical approach to...
Sure.
Aesthetic approach. Anyway, sorry I interrupted you.
No, you're fine. But, no, that's... What was I... I don't even care.
So setting a place, character, incongruousness...
Yeah.
And making them do something terrible.
Yeah.
And it's honest. And I think about... You know, not that I really indulge in mainstream culture anymore.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, we're under the tyranny of the superhero movie and we're under the tyranny of the sitcom or whatever. And there is this, like, wholesomely unreal, wholeheartedly, I guess it thinks it's wholesome, misconception of what humanity is.
Sure.
You know, I think of me as Gen Xer and, you know, whatever this says about my family. Just fantasize, like, man, I wish I could be in that family in Growing Pains.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, that's, like, my family sucks. This is what I want. And what was that show on every Wednesday?
Family Matters?
Family Matters.
I really wanted to be in Family Matters.
Ooh, that would be good.
Yeah, they were good. They were a good family.
They were a good family.
Growing Pains was kind of weirdly... I loved it when I was growing up, but, you know, I think it's just, like, once you know things about... What's his name?
Kirk Cameron.
Well, Kirk Cameron, yeah, he's crazy, right?
Yes, and he went crazy.
And Robin Thicke's dad, right? They're all, like, evangelicals or Scientologists. They're doing weird shit. They're weird, weird, weird people.
Actually, you know what's funny? If you can seek it out, people, the Canadian CBC interpretation or series, they did one season, and it ends on this awful cliffhanger of Douglas Copeland's novel J-Pod.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Thicke plays Alan Thicke.
Oh my God, Alan Thicke.
And in he plays his celebrity and, like, the worst possible version of his celebrity in that show. It's utterly brilliant.
Isn't it? Alan Thicke's dead, right? Didn't
Yes, he died kind of young.
Yeah.
Kirk Cameron went crazy evangelical.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, there was something I was going to... What was I going to say? What was I going to say to you? Damn it. Oh, you're talking about sitcoms and, like, kind of modern culture. So here's something that I'm like, very happy to be alive right now for, like, many reasons. One reason is we have shows like Fleabag by Phoebe Waller-Bridge. We have Broad City. We have just... Oh, we have Pen 15. We have all these shows helmed by women, mostly millennials, who are hilarious, irreverent, who create these characters that are incredibly misbehaving and sometimes mean-spirited and very complicated and sexy and cool. And I just feel like we're living in a time when I think a lot of women and women-identified artists and non-binary people are, like, killing it.
Yeah.
They're like, finally, there's room. There is more room for us being made right now. And part of it is because of, you know, fucking Harvey Weinstein and Me Too and all that shit. Yeah. So there's room being made for a lot of stories and stories by people of color that was not made, did not exist even 2 years, even before Trump, right before Trump. That space didn't exist. And Trump has made, I almost think, you know, part of it is that Trump has the existence of Trump has made that space possible, or has has made that space, has opened that space faster than maybe it would have been opened.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, there was always this... Yeah, I mean, the way that sort of straight, like, heteronormative whiteness works. Mm-hmm. And it was, we lived in it, or I grew up in it, you know, I grew up in a suburban community.
Sure.
And the illusion of it, that this was how the universe, this is just it. This is the universe. This is normal.
Everyone's white. Everyone's straight.
Yeah.
Everyone's, you know, male or female.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And you think about, and this is, you know, maybe my Michel Foucault popping out, but you know, like, there is a power dynamic in that that's almost invisible and is power from below. And there were always these siren calls of this that we followed. And it's like what Trump did in this, like, late moment when the world is getting more diverse. And I saw the Trump thing before. I lived the Trump thing in high school because my white flight suburban community, by the time I think my high school, by the time I graduated, we went from having, like, the one African-American kid to being 40% minority. And the anxieties of that community, I mean, we had, like, fear of race riots. And, but it was, like, it was this because, like, this made us special because we escaped these people. And now these people are buying houses in our community and actually spending more money. Like, more money than, you know, we could have afforded these houses for. And what does that mean? Right. You know, which is sort of what's happening nationally. It seems like, you know, now that, but it's almost like that siren call, Trump made it vulgar. You know, he just amped it up to the degree where we see its vulgarity in such stark terms.
Yep, it's always been here. It's you know, it's always been here. It's just that now, you know, some people say, like, oh, now it's okay to be a racist. And I'm like, well, it was actually, like, okay, and I put that in quotes, to be a racist, even when we're thinking about the 90s and we're thinking about, like, colorblindness, right? Like, oh, we just don't see race. We're not even going to talk about race, and that makes it better, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, that wasn't better. That wasn't, like, that wasn't a good choice either, you know?
Yeah, I had this horrible experience a few years ago now, when I was still at it, well... I was at a university that had a dance conservatory in downtown Pittsburgh that shall not be named. And I assigned Peggy McIntosh's White Privilege the Invisible Knapsack. And you want to talk about a room full of ballerinas who turned into your drunk uncle who you hope doesn't show up at Thanksgiving?
Oh, my God.
It was horrifying and amazing at the same time. Like, to press this button that, you know, actually, you know, white privilege is like this invisible knapsack, and it, people carry it through their lives, and it opens doors in ways that, you know, and you, your subjectivity exists in a way that other people have to be really conscious of. And yeah, it was the reactionariness. And the reading...
Were there people that were like, I'm not going to read this? Or were there...
They read it, but they did not want to talk about it. Yeah. I kind of, you know, did the Freirean pedagogy thing where there was a bunch... It was a three-hour night class. Here are the readings. Where do you want to start? And everybody wanted to start... There were two choices that week. Everybody wanted to start with the other one. And so we would always take a break around 7:38. You know, bathroom break, smoke break, whatever. And I said, all right. We have, when we came back, I was like, we gotta do this. Yeah. We gotta talk about white privilege, the invisible knapsack, which is a great, by the way, and available for free if anybody wants to read it and explore. But yeah, it was either, well, okay, so it was written in 1984. Oh, well, but it's different now. It's different now. And yeah, no. And then the other was, well, yeah, but there's really mean black people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The worst was, though, somebody in her reading journal said, you know, this book is irrelevant because the racial division she's described, or this essay is irrelevant because the racial description she describes are no longer in existence. And then 5, 6, 10 college ruled notebook lines later, because of slavery, coloreds don't think they have to work.
Wow.
Which also, it was the 21st century, and she used the word, and an 18-year-old used the word coloreds. A is remarkable. And then B, like, put these two sentences, draw a line. Yeah, I never bumped into that student again.
One of the most common things my colleagues and I at I went to Oregon State University for grad school, great program. But one of the most common things that would happen when we were teaching comp, we all had different themes. Mine was the rhetoric of comedy, which really turned into like the rhetoric of the comedy in comedy and like racial commentary, right? So we watched a lot of Key and Peele videos. That was kind of what we did. And so I got a lot of essays, and a lot of my cohort did too, where kids would use the word colored. White kids would use the word colored, and we'd have to say, I know you don't actually mean this the way you think. You don't actually mean this. You need to change this. You need to scrub this word from your vocabulary and never, ever, ever use it. Ever. But it was weird. It was this kind of like, I had some essays that were like, racism doesn't exist. Here's why. Yeah. But for the most part, when that would pop up, it was kids that like were just incorrectly, they wanted to say people of color, or they wanted to say African Americans, or they wanted to say like the black community, and they were using the word colored. And I'm like, you can't do that, right? Like, words have meaning, and you can't use that word ever again. Yeah.
I was just at the Association of English Departments / MLA Leadership Conference. It was here in Pittsburgh.
Fun.
Oh, it was great. It was wonderful. But we were talking, there was a panel I went to, or a roundtable about teaching difference. Mm-hmm. And this guy is from a religious school in Ohio. I shouldn't out him. But a religious school in Ohio who, you know, is teaching human dignity and teaching, you know, and trying to teach civility and trying to teach, well, just be nicer to other people and other kinds of people. Mm-hmm. And he didn't think it was in any really overt, like, liberal brainwashing way. And he had a group of students that crashed his promotion meeting to complain about the agenda in his class, and that they were making us think about other kinds of people. And
wow.
Yeah. And he was talking about how he, you know, had a class this last semester where he had a student that would declare things. Once a class, and it happened, he said, about four times in this semester, would declare something, get up and walk out.
Wow.
Like,
just say it, drop the mic,
and go. Like, you know, I think they were talking about, I think, Philando Castile, you know, and getting pulled over and being a legal gun owner and getting shot, and just talking about this dynamic. Mm-hmm. And the guy just stood up, said, I live in a trailer park with my dad. I get pulled over too. And just walked out.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the defensiveness it's so hard to watch and see and experience.
Yeah, whiteness is fragile.
Whiteness is very fragile.
Which, Pittsburgh 2019.
Yep.
You know, even in the enlightened East End.
Yeah, the enlightened East End, right.
Is whiteness is incredibly fragile.
Yep.
On that happy note, would you like, could you give us a, indulge yeah. us with a little reading?
Sure, I'll read about some white people here.
Yes.
Living in the country. I think I'm actually going to read from Homemaking instead of Updates.
Oh, I love that story.
Yeah, I haven't really read from this one in a while, so.
Oh, great.
Let's just see. Well, I don't want to go on too long.
Doesn't worry, we got no time limits here. You can do what you need. Okay. Do what you need.
Okay. Homemaking. The winter of fourth grade, I got my period for the first time. I got it on Valentine's Day. I got it during gym, during freeze tag. I got it while I was frozen. I was a very competitive child. I couldn't quit the game. Mary Klepper asked if I'd sat on a prune, knowing full well I hadn't. She'd gotten her period the month before. After gym, I ran to the nurse's office. She just ran out of pads. Sorry, she said. They don't give me enough. But she didn't look sorry. She gave me a navy Hard Rock Cafe sweatshirt from the Lost and Found and told me to wrap it around my waist. What about the bleeding? I said. Stuff your underwear with toilet paper. That's it? My take home is $12 an hour. That's it. Mom said the girls were getting theirs much younger nowadays. She blamed the hormones that they pumped into our food. Mary's mother bought her flowers, cooked her favorite meal, but with mine there was no such display, no tears at the reality of my burgeoning womanhood. Oh God, it begins, she said, and shooed me towards the bathroom. Go put on a pad. I found the Always box under the sink, but there weren't any pads in it. Instead, there was a thick wad of cash held together by a well-worn rubber band. I counted the bills slowly, listening for my mother's footsteps. There was $722. Most nights, I did my homework on the floor next to the wood stove in two pairs of socks, while our father sat on the lazy boy, and my sister Judy wrote love letters to the boys from school. She told me I was lucky I was too young for love. She couldn't keep up with how her feelings darted around. She had to write them all down just to sleep at night. Some were particularly lurid, and because of this, she hid the letters under her mattress. We kept the TV on all night, starting with Jeopardy at 7 p.m. Dad would slur wrong answers and pass out by the first daily double. Judy, who ranked at the top 1 percentile of her 9th grade class, would call out the right answers. What is the Parthenon? Who is Richard Nixon? What is nitrogen? Mom preferred unsolved mysteries. It was no secret that she had a crush on Robert Stack. She taped all the episodes and would rewatch them in her room. She called this unwinding. It was on one of these blustery nights during a commercial break that I first noticed Connie. The commercial was for a realty company. Houses that cost a fortune flashed across the screen, brick ones with mile-long driveways, white-pillared ones with horse stables. Then a blonde in a blush pantsuit materialized, leaning casually on a fireplace mantle. She wore her hair swept back with a tuft of bangs and bright pink lipstick, a mouth with teeth like peppermint chiclets. She resembled an old Barbie I had decapitated. Why buy a house when you could own a home? The woman was saying. Her name, Connie Baker, and her phone number bounced below her breasts. There was something about her eyes. I couldn't stop looking at them. They reminded me of the blue agate on my bookshelf. And it wasn't just that. Her face was strangely familiar. Where had I seen it before? Our mother kicked open the door then, pies in hand. Judy and I jumped up to help her. What kind? I asked. Apple and blueberry. She shook the snow off her coat and knocked her boots together and placed them in front of the wood stove. Dad grabbed at her as she walked to the kitchen and tried to pull her into his lap for a kiss. She dodged him. You stink, she said. The four of us sat in the kitchen and ate the pies. The blizzard howled around us. Tree branches rapped against the kitchen window above the sink. The wooden cellar door slammed open and shut with each new gust of wind. Mom was pulling doubles at the diner most days, and sometimes she was too tired to even make hamburger helper. I didn't understand why she was working so much. Our father had a good job. He was a lineman and spent many hours a week in other counties fixing other people's phone lines. Sometimes he'd get a call in the middle of the night and have to leave, and I'd leap out of bed at the sound of the front door, worried it was an intruder. I poured myself a glass of milk. That's when I saw the magnet on the fridge door. It was that same woman from the commercial. How long had it been there? Who's this? I asked. Connie. She's new in town. Her realty office is across from the diner. Judy perked up. Are you selling the house? Are we moving? I could see all of her crushes flash before her, her face draining of color. Mom smiled and shook her head. She's come in for lunch a few times. I didn't want to hear any more about Connie. At school today, we started the ancient Egypt unit, I said. Dad and Judy looked up at me. Mom kept smiling, eyeing the last piece of apple pie. Miss Arendelle said that at first they buried their dead in the sand, and the sand preserved the corpses, but then the rich Egyptians, the pharaohs, wanted tombs for their dead so they could visit the bodies. But then when they'd go to visit the bodies, they found them totally rotted. That's why they started mummifying them. Seems pretty grim, them teaching you about corpses in school, Dad said, scooping up the last piece of pie. Mom glared. You want to split this? Asked Dad. Nope. Have at it, she said, and snatched the empty plates and began washing them. Wait until you get to make a mini sarcophagus. That's the best part, said Judy. Mom blasted the faucet and vigorously scrubbed. What's a sarcophagus? I asked. A coffin, said Mom.
So good. Thanks. Oh, thanks. So fun. Oh, I've been in that household.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Sure. So I guess so for folks who want to find out how Homecoming ends and engage with the other four stories, I guess what's the best way to come in possession of off days? I guess that
com. Like, where can you get it?
Yeah.
Well, now it's at White Whale Bookstore.
It's at White Whale.
One of my favorite bookstore in the city.
Yeah.
It's also at Caliban.
Of course.
And it's on Amazon.com.
It's on Amazon.
Yeah. So you can get any of those places. You can also buy directly from Logos. You can buy directly from Chris Collins, the publisher as well.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there is an email address. I will post those links in the thing when I... In the on the MP3 and all that fun stuff, and on the web when I upload this. So it's now time for the bottom five.
All right.
It's now time for the bottom five. The bottom five is a series of questions not related to our main topic that are of a surrealistic and or philosophical nature.
Okay.
Are you ready, Taylor?
Okay.
Are you ready?
Okay. All
question
right.
One. It's a question everybody gets first time they're on the podcast. If reincarnation is real, and you had to come back as an infectious disease or illness, what kind of disease or illness would you want to be?
Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah.
Chicken pox.
Ooh, that's a solid one.
Yeah. Because, like, you only get it once.
Yeah.
You know? It's not that bad. It sucks. I had it.
Yeah,
I remember.
Me too, second grade.
It's kind of like, as much as it's kind of, I guess it's kind of gross, but it's also kind of cute. Like, isn't it kind of cute to just see, like, a kid, like, covered in little red dots? I don't know, like a little bingo ink, like, all over their little arms.
Yeah, you know?
I don't know.
Yeah, I like it.
It's not that gross. And you just put some calamine on it. You're done, you know?
You're done. And you stay home from school a couple days. And
yeah, you get to stay home, watch the soaps with your mom.
Yeah.
Or dad.
I did miss the second grade class picnic, though.
Oh, that sucks. I don't think I missed anything I cared about.
Yeah.
Okay,
so chicken pox. You know the other thing about chicken pox, though? Chicken pox also has a great second act in adulthood called shingles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can get shingles if you've had chicken
yes.
pox. God damn
it. In fact, I think you need to have chicken pox in order to get shingles.
Need to have them.
Yes.
Okay.
So you had to have them before.
I
and then
to.
It,
great.
Yes.
Can't wait.
And
How does chicken pox happen? I don't really understand how that works in the body, like chemically, why that... Do you know anything about that? Why we get chicken pox?
I used to back when I had a science brain, but my science brain got turned off.
I don't know shit about science.
Yeah, so it's science shit.
Okay,
science. It's science shit.
Science
you know?
Shit. All right.
Science shit. Scientists who do science shit know about that shit.
And, okay. Yeah, if we could take callers, I bet there'd be a lot of people just calling.
Yes,
right?
I know. The phones would light up. And, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All those people with...
it's a conspiracy.
Yeah.
You
all
know,
those
anyway.
Bros. Yeah.
Yes.
Cool.
Yes. Okay, question two, which I've lifted from the book of Surrealist Games. If you had to choose, would you welcome the total elimination of day or night?
Oh my god. fuck.
What time of
I,
sky would you,
you
could
know,
you do without?
I think I would eliminate day.
Yeah, day sucks.
I love a magic hour. And I love like staying up late.
Mm.
I do most of my fun things at night. I like night. Yeah. I'd eliminate day.
Ah, yeah, fuck day.
Fuck, we get 3 days of sunlight in Pittsburgh anyway. What's the
Yeah,
difference?
Fuck it. Yeah. Question three.
Mm-hmm.
Name an item from your childhood that you lost or got rid of that you most wish you could get back.
I had a Star of David necklace that my paternal grandmother gave me. It was amethyst.
Mm.
It was really cute. And I don't know. You know, it might still be in my parents' house somewhere, but I don't think so. I think it's gone.
Oh.
Yeah.
Another domestic question, actually. This wasn't on purpose. I chose these before. Question four. Is there anything in your home that you're afraid of?
Well...
I see. I got a circular saw in the basement.
Yeah.
I'm fucking terrified of
you
that.
You think
thing.
It's gonna? Oh, okay. I'll say this.
It'll take off fingers.
Here's what I was afraid of, but no longer am, and I'll tell you why. I have a ceiling fan above my bed. Fantastic. Keeps me cool in the summer.
Yeah.
But when I first moved in, the fan was not balanced properly, so it was real wobbly, and I was like, I was waking up every night in the middle of the night feeling like the fan was gonna chop me up.
Oh!
But then I got them balanced, and now it's totally fine. I'm not worried
cool.
about it.
You're under a ceiling fan right now as you say that, actually.
Yeah, but it's not... See, it's not wobbly at all.
It's not wobbly
perfect.
At all, no.
It's not going to fall on me.
It doesn't have an overhead light, though. That kind of makes this room a bummer. But anyway. Yeah, all right.
But it's nice. It's like gold. It's yeah. Like a fancy gold fan.
Yeah, wasn't my choice. Came with the house.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, it's all right. All right. We're almost through this now. In question five is the Christopher Hitchens question.
Okay.
Of the living villains of history, whose obituary would you most like to write?
Oh, that's so good.
Yes, which it came from his book Mortality. When he realized he was going to die, he listed the people whose obituaries he was looking forward to reading. And then he goes, wait, I wanted to write those.
All right. Okay, I think that he's still alive. I can't believe he still is. I'm going to be really sad if you tell me he's not. Fucking Pat Robertson.
Pat Robertson is still with us. Still with us and still saying stupid shit.
That evil son of a bitch. I want to write that motherfucker's obituary.
Yeah.
He sucks. I would have said Fred Phelps, but he died. He died a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, thank God.
But you're right.
No
yeah.
pun intended, you know.
That's a good one. All right. Well, I think that's about it. Again, thank you so much, Taylor Grieshober.
Yeah, you got it.
Oh, I got
All
it right.
Third time's the charm.
Yes, and her fourth. Her wonderful new book, again, is Off Days, Stories, available from Logos Press, which you can get directly from the publisher, Chris Collins. I will throw their email address. I'll bury it in the MP3 tag, and I will put it on sure. the web. Also, you can get it from Amazon if you're not local. But if you are local and don't feel like ordering, just feel like going to a physical bookstore, White Whale in Bloomfield and Caliban in Oakland has this collection. Buy this. There's only 100 copies.
Get it while you can.
It's also, I should say, it's a dainty book, but
it's pocket size.
It's pocket size. It is perfect.
Yeah.
If you want to get out of your headspace on the bus.
Yep. It's a quick read.
Lunch break.
Yeah.
There's 5 freestanding stories. You can savor it like a box of chocolates.
Sure.
Or eat it in one big, indulgent thing. Get into the world of these short stories. Do it now. All right. So I think that's about it. Our next episode will eventually happen, and it'll be about something.
Cool.
Our homepage, where you can find new and old episodes, is gonnadiepodcast.com. We're also on, I guess this is dated now, we're on iTunes, but iTunes isn't real anymore.
What? What do you mean it's not real?
Yeah, they're shutting down iTunes.
Why would they do that?
Because then there's like 5 apps that you... 5 unwieldy large apps
Why would they
won't
do?
Work.
Okay.
Because they're Apple. They're supposedly the next generation of iPhones will need a new charger. A new kind of charger. That's
Give me
the rumor.
A goddamn brick.
Yes,
I'm going to switch.
Yeah,
I'm
do it. Let's all have Linux phones. That,
yeah.
Not that they exist. But so we're on that Apple podcast, iTunes conglomerate. We're also on Google Play podcast, Stitcher, TuneIn, Podcast Addict, and Mixcloud, when I remember to do it. I think we're on a couple other things. And we're going to try Spotify again.
Love Spotify. I'm a Spotify user.
They are motherfuckers when it comes to putting a podcast on.
Really?
Yeah, so because I try to be independent and do my own hosting and I don't go through things. They are motherfuckers about it.
Yeah, they want you to use more people or brain. What do they want you to do? Use
they want me
money.
To pay the money,
money
for this thing I give away for free.
Yeah.
That's
some bullshit.
That is some bullshit.
Yeah.
So follow us on Twitter at Gonna Die Podcast, and We're All Gonna Die is on Facebook. Thanks again, Taylor. Later, meets.